Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
In the Shannon last week, the independent Senator Billy Lawless called on RTE to maintain its long-wave radio service so that the Irish in Britain can continue to have access to RTE Radio 1 on an analogue platform. The long-wave transmitter, which is based in Clarkstown in County Meath, is threatened with closure this year, probably on the 1st of May. RTE claims that it costs €250,000 a year to run the Clarkstown facility, that listenership on long wave is negligible, and that those wishing to listen to Radio 1 outside the state can continue to do so online. 252 kHz was threatened with closure in 2014, but a campaign group, Save RTE Longwave 252, led to a postponement. The group was set up by former RTE engineer Enda O'Kane and representatives of the Irish community in Britain, and continues to lobby for a continuation of the service, with additional events planned with the diaspora between now and St Patrick's Day. Last year, a survey of over 3,000 Irish people in Britain by Middlesex University found that large majorities of respondents believed that the longwave service was a lifeline to Ireland and preferred it to digital or online platforms. I spoke to Richard Logue in London, a representative of Save RTE Longwave 252, and asked him first to explain the background to the campaign.
Back in 2008, RTE shut down their long-established medium wave transmissions from Tullamore. And at that time, RTE had said that because they have transmissions going out on long wave, which pretty much duplicate what the medium wave transmissions had, they felt it was actually more value to them and certainly to their listeners to keep long wave and end the medium wave transmissions. And in fact, back in 2008, John Paul Coakley, who's head of operations of RTE Radio, had actually written an article in the Irish News in which he assured people in Northern Ireland that certainly long-wave transmissions would continue, and that under the obligations for RTE for the Broadcasting Acts, that they felt that long-wave was the better option for RTE on the AM bands.
And if this is the case, how then has it come to pass that Longwave 252 is threatened with closure?
Well, it was threatened with closure. In fact, they made an announcement very, very quickly in October of 2014, and they basically gave the service about 3 weeks before they were going to close it. And they talked about the expense of transmission. It costs approximately €250,000 per year to transmit RT Radio 1 on Longwave, and they felt that they could switch listeners to digital, whatever that meant at the time. And when RTE were pushed as to what they meant by digital, they basically said, well, we're already on satellite, we're already on the internet, you can shift to that. Now, that's fine up to a point, but the problem is with internet and satellite radio. Internet, for instance, isn't free radio as we know it. If you're on a mobile phone contract, typically a lot of people will have either a cap or a certain amount of data that they're allowed to download on a monthly basis before the charges go ramping up. And if you're on an unlimited cap on internet on your mobile phone, you'll find that you're often paying a premium for that service. So an awful lot of the people who would have been using RT Radio 1 initially from medium wave and then more recent years in long wave typically would have been a lot of elderly people, but also people who want to listen to RT Radio 1 in their cars. And whatever way you cut it, internet radio is still not at the point where you can get reliable in-car reception. But also the whole issue of actually caps and the cost of downloading data to the end user means that there isn't really an incentive for the casual listener to just regard internet radio as something they can flip on and flip off and not worry about the incoming costs of having to manage that.
And what about DAB? DAB is pretty well developed in the UK. There's quite a high level of DAB listenership, an awful lot more than in this country. Could RTE not simply be made available on DAB and most people then would be able to access it?
I think it would be a great idea if RTE were available in DAB, but the problem is that if RTE were to go on DAB in the UK, they'd have to come under the stewardship of Ofcom, who are the equivalent of ComReg in the UK. Now, we know that RTE have tried to set up a temporary DAB service in Manchester, but they've been trying to do this for about the last year, and up till now, I understand that there have been regulatory issues with Ofcom in the UK in order to get RT Radio 1 transmitting. Now, there has been past run-ins between RTE and Ofcom, because back in the day when RTE Radio 1 was on 567 kilohertz and medium wave, there was a pirate station called Laser, which was on 558 in the southeast of England. So RTE lobbied very hard to get Laser off that frequency, and as soon as they were taken off the frequency, the predecessor to Ofcom, the Radio Authority, licensed a powerful AM local radio station in the London area on the 558 frequency. So Tullamore remained blocked out ever since in London. And the other issue is, as well as an issue, I would say, of sovereignty, because with the long-wave frequencies, RTE are only answerable to ComReg, whereas if they go on to DAB in the UK, they'd have to come under regulation of Ofcom as well. And seems to me, at least, that if you're in charge of an Irish radio station, you want to be answerable to your own rather than having to go cap in hand to an overseas administration.
Yes, but what about the arguments about longwave and the, you know, poor quality sound, that this really is a platform of the past, that it's subject to a lot of interference? I mean, all you need to do is plug in a hairdryer and you can hear your longwave signal being disrupted. So what about those arguments, that really this technology is old hat at this stage and we should be moving on?
I can understand why people say that, but actually the AM broadcast band, and in particular longwave, actually is basically able to send its signal in a far longer distance than FM or DAB radio. And a lot of it depends on the strength of the signal. So, for instance, where I live in North London, we've got a very strong Radio 5 Live signal on medium wave, and nothing can interfere with that. Hair dryers, car ignitions, nothing. The other issue is that RTE have been gradually killing off the 252 frequency by the death of 1,000 cuts, because the power of the signal has been reduced significantly. I believe it's under half of what they're actually normally transmitting it at the moment, even in the daytime. So obviously, if you've got a weaker signal, then yes, they are subject to interference. But when you've got a strong signal, that doesn't really matter. Now, back in the day when Atlantic 252 were on the air on 252, it was a thunderous signal. They broadcast at the full strength of 500 kilowatts, and there was very little interference. In fact, where I live in North London, Atlantic was a lot more powerful and longwave than BBC Radio 4.
So the question is not really one of interference. It's a question of reduced power by RTE on 252, which presumably is in preparation for close down?
I would have thought so, because I know from the results of the survey that was undertaken by the Department of Foreign Affairs that listeners at the Luton Irish Centre said that they hadn't been able to listen to RTE Radio 1 for some time because the signal was so weak. Of course, you've got the other issue as well, is that on the same 252 frequency, you've got a very powerful radio station in Algeria, which has increased its power significantly in recent years, and that blots out RTE Radio 1 over a large part of southern England now, even in the daytime. And I understand from people even in Ireland at night it often interferes as well.
Yes, also in Galway we have interference from Algeria at night, that is the case. And so I understand that you have been making some attempt to possibly propose a change of frequency to 261 kilohertz, the next available channel.
That's correct, John. So basically, the long wave bands are pretty open compared to the medium wave bands, and 261 has been vacant for some years now, and there is no sign at the moment of any further stations wanting to operate. Now, the reason we would like to see RTE Radio 1 move to 261 is that it would be relatively little adjustment in the transmitter, and certainly on the transmitting aerial site, but it's a clear channel. Now, if RTE were then broadcasting at their full power of 500 kilowatts, they could practically send RTE Radio 1 right down to the Alps on that signal, and it wouldn't be interfering with anybody else. You know, on that kind of strength, you'd have a totally clear and uninterfered signal, and it would be potentially able to carry right down as far as the Swiss Alps. So that would be covering a large chunk of Europe. I certainly think in these times of Brexit, it really is in Ireland's interests to be able to have our own national radio station readily available, so we can hear an Irish perspective on what's happening, and also for the many thousands of Irish living over here in Britain, and of course increasingly large numbers in continental Europe as well.
So what difference has this made on a daily basis then to listenership of RTE Radio 1 on analogue services in the UK and on longwave in the UK? You mentioned the report by Professor Louise Ryan and others, an analysis of longwave radio in Britain. So
yes,
maybe you could talk to us a little bit about that report now.
I certainly will. So basically what happened was that they undertook a survey on behalf of the Department of Foreign Affairs, which was really, I suppose, in reaction to the very strong words of condemnation that came out of the Irish community here in Britain. But basically, what they found in the survey was that the bulk of listeners very much valued the fact that RT Radio 1 was available on a conventional radio, and significant numbers were saying that they listened to it quite regularly in the car. Now, if you go down the route of internet only and satellite, you can completely eliminate car radio listenership because it stops becoming a easy option in the car. Now, at the same time, people were basically saying they would listen, you know, a good 44% of the respondents said we usually listen to it in the car. So that's a pretty big audience, and the type of people, you know, radios, you know, devices that people were using were primarily either portable radios, car radios, or kitchen radios. Very few were actually listening on computers or on a mobile phone device.
But I suppose the point that RTE would make would be that people could listen on their computers, and indeed most people in the survey, despite their age, many of them were elderly, most people in the survey reported having a computer.
Indeed, but as I mentioned earlier, with the whole issue of data caps, where a lot of people have for the internet access, you know, listening to radio for, say, let's say, I typically would listen to Morning Ireland in the morning for an hour and a half, and I might listen to Late Date then at around about 11 or 12 o'clock at night in bed, and that's 2.5 hours of listening. That's a significant chunk of data that you're actually downloading. And if you're on a capped internet provider, then you're going to end up spending a lot of money just to listen to radio.
Can you tell us about some of the other findings of the report then that were important from the point of view of the Save RTE 252 campaign?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it was shown that the bulk of the listenership were in the sort of the older age bracket, and there were people who were primarily interested in listening, as I say, on conventional radios or in their car. But it also showed that there was, if you look at the kind of proportion, I believe there was something like about 3,500 people responded to the survey. Now, in terms of samples of audience, that's actually quite a large sample of people who selected to get involved in the actual survey itself. So any claims that RTE have made that the long-wave listenership in Britain was tiny, I don't really think stack up in terms of what's actually been said in that report.
Can we look a little bit then, Richard, at some of the technical aspects in terms of AM broadcasting in general? Because I suppose this raises bigger questions. I mean, we had in the last month or two FM being turned off in Norway, but many countries have now moved away from AM, and AM is very much viewed as a historical platform that maybe doesn't have a future. What are your views on those arguments?
Well, I don't necessarily buy those arguments about the historical platform. I mean, remember I said earlier that the AM broadcast bands actually had very different characteristics to, say, FM or DAB. So, in a nutshell, an AM transmission, that medium wave and long wave, can go several hundred miles with a single transmitter. Now, we know that TDF in France, who are the operators of the French broadcast network, have actually done some very, very interesting research into how to actually marry up AM broadcast bands with into Android tablets and smartphones. Now, this means that you can actually pass on data. Now, you've also got the development of DRM digital radio, which is essentially digital radio on the AM broadcast bands. And between all of that, I think AM broadcasting actually has a far brighter future than a lot of these so-called experts actually often say, because you've actually got the capability of sending signals directly into up-to-date devices. Now, India, for instance, which is very much now a very key radio market, in India there's been a very big push to digital radio on the AM broadcast bands. And I would say in another 5 to 10 years, I think you could actually see a resurgence of AM broadcasting, because at the end of it, it's a lot more efficient for a broadcaster to own one site rather than having to do multiple sites.
Despite the evidence then that DAB has been quite heavily invested in Europe, you don't think that DAB is the future of radio broadcasting?
I think DAB does have a future in radio broadcasting, but I think the fact that AM broadcast bands are able to send signals very long distances from a single site, I think that ultimately there will be a move back towards that, especially once the DRM broadcast method is actually perfected, because what you effectively have then is a sort of the ability to send signals very long distance just by using a very small number of transmitters. So I wouldn't rule anything out. I mean, DAB, I think, may ultimately take over from FM as a sort of a local broadcast system, but I still think there's going to be a need in future years for countries to be able to send either to their diaspora or out to other countries as sort of the whole need for broadcast over long distances.
So can we look a little bit then at medium wave versus long wave? Because long wave is perhaps the poor cousin in this case, even if you look at the average radio that you'd buy in a electronics store. Most radios will have medium wave, but not every radio will have long wave. And the same applies in cars, that most car radios will have medium wave at FM, for instance, but not long wave. So was the decision perhaps to close the Tullamore transmitter on medium wave in 2008, was that really the biggest mistake that RTE has made in your view?
I think it's a significant mistake. I mean, from my personal point of view here in Northwest London, I wasn't able to receive 567 because of the Spectrum radio station on 558, but it did provide coverage easily into Northern Ireland, and it did provide coverage into the UK Midlands and the north of England and up into Scotland. That to me seems to me a pretty short-sighted view in terms of getting rid of the actual service. But as I say, the long wave still has the advantage of longer distance propagation over medium wave signals as well.
So would you be happy then with a restoration to full power of the long wave signal and a move to 261? Would that in your mind be a success of your campaign?
It would be. I mean, certainly moving the signal to 261 would resolve the issues of interference from Algeria, and it would give RTE the opportunity to expand their audience most significantly. I mean, don't forget, they've never sold advertising either out into overseas markets, and there has been a fairly significant listenership to RTE Radio 1 up until recent years. So I think if RTE were able to keep the long wave service but move it, as I say, onto the clear channel of 261, which is just up the dial slightly from 252, it would give them the opportunity to actually have their service available to a far wider audience than at present.
Can we look a little bit at the campaign? Because you've been very much involved mobilising on the ground with other representatives of Irish groups in Britain and so on and so forth. So why does this issue matter so much to the Irish diaspora, do you think?
I think it matters because we want to keep in touch with what's going on at home. And, you know, RTE Radio 1 has been available to a great deal of the Irish abroad ever since 1926. I mean, as early as 1926, people were picking it up in Birmingham. So it's been an absolutely important part of Irish people's lives. I have to say that, you know, RTE Radio 1, and I've travelled extensively around the world, is probably one of the finest radio stations out there. They really do have a very high quality threshold for their programming. But there's also a lot of very dedicated people here in Britain working amongst the Irish diaspora, and I have to particularly mention people like Myra Butler in Manchester, Deirdre Quill in Leeds, Noreen Bowden, and also Michael Burke, Irish in Britain, and Jenny McShannon, who's the former chief executive of Irish in Britain. They've been very active in getting local communities aware and the need to get back in touch with the Department of Foreign Affairs and RTE to show that people value our, and this is our radio station. It isn't just this radio station on the island of Ireland. You know, this is, you know, very much an intrinsic part of what we are and how we can listen to Gaelic games, listen to music, listen to chat, Joe Duffy, Maren Finucane, and all of that. It's such an intrinsic part of being Irish that you can't imagine your life without it, quite frankly.
And what are your plans for the remainder of the campaign?
So what we're looking at now, we're awaiting to find out what the results of the Department of Foreign Affairs committee are. They've basically, on the back of the survey, have formed a committee of representatives of the Irish community plus RTE plus the department, and we understand they're coming back to report as to what their chosen option is on that. So we're going to keep, you know, the visibility of the campaign alive. We've had a lot of backing from very senior people like Conor McGinn MP, who would be a leading member of the Irish community, who's a member of parliament here in Britain. We've had great support from people like Father Brian Darcy, Dunnock O'Dooling, people who know the value that Irish radio is to people, and we will just keep on pushing and hoping that the powers that be in Dublin realise that yes, we are out there and we do value our link with home.
What about the argument that RTE would undoubtedly make that this is costing them a quarter of a million of euros per year, and that they're operating in a restricted budgetary situation, and that really they need to spend this money on something more important than what is a very secondary long-wave service that isn't really aimed at the island of Ireland at all, but is...
Well, the RTE are actually under an obligation from the Broadcasting Act to provide a radio and television service to the diaspora. That's absolutely written into the laws that govern RTE, and I have to say that I believe that it's RTE's duty, not just legally but morally, to serve not just the island of Ireland, but also the Irish in Britain. And incidentally, on the whole issue of the island of Ireland, if they do switch off long-wave transmissions, then large chunks of Belfast and parts of Northern Ireland will not have access to RTE Radio 1 except either by satellite or internet. So on that level, I think they're also shirking their responsibility to listeners on the island of Ireland.
And that was Richard Logue of the Save RTE Longwave 252 campaign speaking to us earlier from London. Well, we asked RTE for a comment or for a spokesperson to comment on this topic, but we didn't receive any response from them. You can learn more about the campaign to maintain the longwave service at savertelongwaveradio.com and on social media.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.